Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling the Taxes Committee to order for February 29th, 2024. There is a quorum present. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from February 22nd. Do I have a motion, Vice Chair Norris?
Chair Gomez, I move adoption of the minutes from February 22nd.
Vice Chair Norris has moved adoption of the minutes. Is there any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries. The minutes for February 22nd are adopted. So we have two things on the agenda. The first, we're going to hear a bill later, but first up, the Department of Revenue was directed by the legislature last year to complete a report on free filing. And so we're going to turn first to Nick Yule and Jonathan Randolph. Please welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. And please just state your name for the record before you get started with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nick Yule. I'm the Director of Tax Systems Planning at the Department of Revenue.
I'm Jonathan Randolph, Annual Changes Program Manager with the Department of Revenue.
Great. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. It's our pleasure to be here today to provide information on the free file report that was submitted to the legislature earlier this year. And in our discussion today, our goal is to first provide an introduction, some background on the free file report that we did submit, that we did put together. We also want to provide some high-level information on Minnesota taxpayer filing practices. We're going to talk a little bit about the IRS free file program and other tax assistance programs available to Minnesotans. And we're also going to provide a little bit of information on the IRS direct file program, which is new this year. We'll talk about that pilot test. We're going to provide a little bit of information on the survey, background on the survey that we sent to 27 different tax software providers. And we'll review what we learned from that survey. We'll review some potential alternative options to having the state partner with a software vendor to provide free state income tax returns for Minnesotans. And we'll also share a little bit about what some other states are doing in this space. And finally, we'll share some parting thoughts we have based off what we learned as part of this process. So the free file report, as you mentioned, was an outcome of the 2023 legislative session requiring revenue to gather information from software providers with the goal of understanding options for providing free electronic filing for Minnesota individual income tax returns, state income tax returns. Key information was gathered through a survey of tax software vendors with the goal of informing what options may be available. Some of the key information pieces that were required as part of that outreach included gaining an understanding of some of the system development and security needs, as well as opportunities and trying to get some cost information, potential cost information. Working to get estimates on the cost per return that could be charged to the state to provide these services, gathering information on how customer service could be handled, learning more about how a link between revenue and the IRS e-file program might work, understanding from software providers how taxpayer information would be maintained and protected, and finally, just learning more about the current availability of products and services that allow for free filing of state returns. Additional information required in the report, some of which I'll cover in this presentation, includes a review of options that other states use for electronic filing, an assessment of taxpayer needs for electronic filing, including current filing practices, an analysis of alternative options to provide free filing, such as tax credits, vendor incentives, and other benefits, and finally, a little bit deeper analysis of the Internal Revenue Service free file program, as well as direct file. As we talk more about information included in this report, I just want to touch briefly on some information indicating how Minnesota individual income tax filers file their taxes. As you can see in this chart, this is based off 2022 information. About 2.9 million Minnesotans filed individual income tax returns. Nearly 60% of those returns are filed with a professional tax preparer, and about 40% self-prepared their returns. And all total of that 2.9 million returns, 94% of those returns were filed electronically. So Minnesota, like all the other states, really do have a strong preference towards electronic filing. I also want to take a minute and just talk about some of the free filing options that are available to Minnesotans. First is the IRS free file program. This allows qualified taxpayers to prepare and file their federal income tax returns using guided tax software. This program was established in 2002. And FreeFile is a private-public partnership between the IRS and the Free File Alliance, which is a coalition of tax software companies. The IRS doesn't pay these vendors. These vendors volunteer to do this work. To qualify for IRS Free File, individuals must have an adjusted gross income, an AGI, of $79,000 or less. In addition to the IRS Free File program, two additional programs have been available to Minnesotans that allow individuals to file electronically for free, provided they qualify. The first one is the Tax Counseling for the Elderly, also known as TCE, and it's available to individuals who are age 60 or older. And if you're married or have a spouse that's only one of you needs to be 60 to qualify. There's no income limits for TCE, and TCE is it's operated in partnership primarily with the AARP to give you some sense of kind of some of who their partners are with that program. Second program I'll talk about is the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, or VITA for short, and this provides basic income tax preparation with electronic filing to taxpayers who generally earn $64,000 or less. It also provides services to persons with disabilities and taxpayers with limited English proficiency who need help preparing their returns. So looking at 2022 data, 1% of Minnesota tax returns were filed as part of the TCE program, 1% for the VITA program, and then another 2% as part of the IRS Free File program. So about 4% were filed using these programs. Just to give you a sense of some other data, it's estimated that 70% of individuals in the United States would qualify for Free File. So there really is a big disparity between who's using the program and who qualifies for the program.
Could I interrupt you for just a sec? What was the, you might have said it and I didn't hear it, but what's the income limit for VITA?
$64,000 or less.
Okay, so it's less than the Free File.
Correct.
And that's married filing jointly?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
This slide shows the change in the use of the IRS Free File program in Minnesota since 2019. As you can see, from 2019 to 2022, there's about a 75% drop in the number of Minnesotans who are taking advantage of the Free File program. And one of the big drivers of this is in 2021, Intuit, otherwise known as TurboTax, they dropped out of the program. And then in 2022, H&R dropped out of the program. So as you can imagine, two of the larger tax preparers who were involved in this when they dropped out, we also saw a precipitous drop in the amount of usage of these programs. While the IRS Free File program has many benefits, there are some shortfalls. For example, the Free File providers are not required to meet requirements for federal digital services in areas such as accessibility, analytics, multi-language support, and mobile support. Some Free File providers have redirected customers from free to paid services. There's been, as you're probably aware, some news recently about how that's impacted TurboTax and some others. Taxpayers may not know how to access the free versions or the Free File versions of software, and Free File providers may use more restrictive criteria than the IRS for filing a free return. I want to talk a little bit about Direct File. This is kind of the newest program out there for filing your taxes. It's in a pilot program. And up through 2019, the IRS had stated in its agreement with the Free File Alliance that it would not provide its own free filing service to Americans across the country. But in 2019, or since 2019, the IRS has been developing an in-house solution to allow individuals to directly file with the IRS. And in 2022, the IRS began actively developing its own Free File program called Direct File. Earlier this year, the IRS launched its Direct File program. The pilot just actually opened up a week ago to the 12 states that are participating in it. There were 1,200 individuals identified who were part of that sort of pre-pilot test that have been part of this program since it launched in late January. But just as of last week, the states have been eligible to, those individuals not part of that initial pilot test have been eligible to participate in this. And there's been some stops and starts with the software as they've worked through some of the initial bugs, but I think as of yesterday it was open again for participants to use that system. As part of the Direct File program, the IRS provides step-by-step guidance for adding tax information, and it also provides real-time support to IRS representatives. Some of the other system features include it's available in English and Spanish. It's accessible from smartphones, laptops, tablets, and desktop computers. And there is no income limit, but the IRS Direct File, at least through this initial pilot program, it's really meant for the most simplified return. So if you're self-employed, you're probably not going to use this software or be able to use it. It's really meant for those using the standard deduction and some of the most simple returns.
Just a kind of question or comment, I guess, on that. Anybody who gets a 1099 has to fill out a self-employment schedule, right? So that means that anybody who is in the gig economy, who drives DoorDash on the weekends, given the shift in the economy, this really excludes a lot of people from this this pilot. I don't know if I know that Minnesota's not, unfortunately, wasn't chosen as one of the pilot states, but I guess just like as we're thinking about potentially moving forward ourselves, I hope that we can moving forward ourselves with a program that we can make sure that we're acknowledging those changes that have happened in our economy and the increasing number of people who are receiving, you know, whether they have a full, you know, small business or they are, you know, a misclassified worker who's getting a 1099 when they're really an employee, which, as we know, is a major issue in our economy. I just hope that we can just accommodate that reality as we're moving forward and make sure that we have options for those people who, you know, have 1099s. So thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned previously, direct file, there's 12 states participating in the 2024 pilot. There are actually 9 states that don't require state income tax. 8 of those are participating. You can see them on the left-hand side of the slide here. Alaska is the other state that is not participating in this. There's also 4 states that do require a state income tax that are participating in this. And one of those states, Massachusetts. Massachusetts uses the same software that we use at the Department of Revenue to collect and record and report on income taxes, state income taxes, gen tax. So we are working with Massachusetts very closely and trying to learn about their experience, both in conversations with Massachusetts as well as through the software vendor. And there's another group that we're working closely with or a part of, the FTA, the Federation of Tax Administrators, who is really being a strong advocate for this and helping arrange conversations. And to your question previously, Madam Chair, understanding some of what's in scope now, what's out of scope, and as we learn more, having those conversations with the IRS about how we can expand that scope based off what we're learning and where we're determined there's additional needs for, you know, individuals to be able to file. Next, I'll share some information about what we learned from the responses we received from the tax preparation software vendors that we reached out to. This information is important, as you can imagine, for Minnesota to consider in thinking about how we might implement our own approach to providing free individual state income tax returns for Minnesotans, perhaps looking at potential partnership with one of these vendors. As part of this research, we reached out to 27 software providers capable of providing modern electronic filing, what we refer to as MEF. They were sent the surveys to gather information from this report. And just to break that down a little bit further, 13 of those providers offer products for self-preparation of individual taxes, and 14 serve tax professionals. We received 9 responses on this survey. Of those 9 vendors, 4 expressed strong interest in providing a state solution, a potential state solution. And also, none of the respondents are currently offering a similar solution with any other states. So one of the questions that we hope to get some information on was the potential cost of a software solution that would allow Minnesotans to file for free. 2 of the 9 vendors who responded provided some cost information. And I just want you to understand that this cost information is very high level. We didn't send them a firm set of requirements. We really left it up to the vendors with some guidelines to help us understand how they might set something up and how they might want to establish a cost for this program. So very high level information. Based off what we received, the estimates were between $2.4 million and $19.5 million annually on what that solution might cost. But again, just sort of take that with a grain of salt, and more information would be needed, a firmer set of requirements gathered to really get down to what that cost might be. The other thing that these costs don't include is what it would cost Revenue and Minute, our partners at Minute, to help design and support a system that may allow individuals to file for free. So those costs don't include our internal costs here. And again, more information would be needed to understand what those cost estimates would be.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite a spread.
Yeah.
2.4 to 19.5 million per year. I definitely would be interested in us working together to figure out how it is that we could I think that seems like it could be a result of them not being given kind of specificity around what would have to be included. So, yeah, I'm just, maybe we can follow up afterwards and talk more about if there's a way to get, because, you know, if we want to move forward with this, we do need sort of a more more useful information than that. But thank you.
There were a number of additional factors to consider that could impact costs, and we can talk about some of those later as well, Madam Chair. But these were provided by, the ones that I'll list here were provided by both revenue employees for consideration as well as some of the responses that we got from the survey respondents. Some of the things to think about are, for example, if we had mid-year or federal conformity law changes, those could impact costs. Costs could change every year depending on the contract, depending on how an agreement may be set up with the provider, how we would structure that. For example, a software vendor may require a minimum fee if we're looking at a per return cost, or if we went with if we decided to go with a fixed price contract, those could be some of the things that we would want to think about. Add-on services could either be included or those could be optional for Minnesota taxpayers. Things like speaking to a tax expert by phone, email, or chat, additional return reviews by a tax expert, audit protection, or return transfer products. These are some of the things, if you filed your own returns using self-preparation software, that you get those options somewhere through that process. So as I mentioned, a detailed set of requirements would really be needed for more precise cost and estimates. This would allow software vendors to have a more specific set of information to react to propose solutions for. And this would also be needed, as I mentioned, for revenue and minute to determine what our support costs would need to be as we would look to support a potential new system. The software vendors were also asked how they would ensure their proposed systems would meet federal and state safety or security requirements. All of the respondents currently meet state and federal requirements, so you know, we're pretty good there, including Minnesota statutes as well as IRS publication 1075 requirements. None of the respondents indicated any expected challenges keeping taxpayer data secure, and none expected any challenges with the requirements of reporting breaches, performing and reporting fraud analysis, and sharing information related to keeping taxpayer data safe and secure. A vendor providing a software solution for Minnesota to file their state individual income taxes would be required to meet strict quality requirements, as you can imagine. And the survey sent to the software providers asked for information how they would do that. Two of the four interested vendors provided information on a quality plan that demonstrates their commitment to developing a product that meets both the initial and ongoing Minnesota needs. The vendors indicated that Minnesota and revenue would require this. We would be able to participate in quality reviews, field user feedback, and helping address complaints and other improvement opportunities, basically to ensure that any solution met Minnesota's usability and accessibility needs. One thing that I want to note, though, is that the expected time frame for implementing a solution like this, when you think about the requirements gathering, figuring out what that the procurement would look like, likely an RFP, a request for proposal, software development and testing, implementation. We're looking at least 2 years. So it's not something that we would necessarily want to move quickly on. It would be more important to take the time to do this right. But again, a lot of that just depends on the initial requirements. And to your point earlier, Madam Chair, whether we want to start off with something like direct file that was very basic, or if we were looking to put something out there that was you know, more available to Minnesotans and their specific needs in filing their income taxes. In addition to gathering information from software vendors, revenue was also asked to consider alternative options for consideration with the goal of reducing or eliminating costs for individual state income tax returns. As part of our analysis, revenue noted six additional options that were discussed and analyzed at a high level within revenue for consideration and further discussion. So please note that these recommendations are not in any specific order. They've been discussed only at the highest levels without really extensive analysis at this point, including any analysis on impacts or costs. So the six potential options that were identified that I'll go into here more on the next few slides are: one, reimbursing Minnesotans directly for their filing costs. The second one is looking to potentially reimburse software providers for Minnesota filing costs, so not necessarily establishing an agreement with them, but just reimbursing the individual costs that Minnesotans might pay to file with these software providers. Three, looking at a free in-house solution for all Minnesota filers. The fourth one is just keeping the current system business as usual. The fifth one is building out capabilities on the results and recommendations of the IRS Direct File program. And the sixth one is working towards increasing the use of IRS Free File, VITA, TCE, and other existing programs. And so as we talk about these aren't necessarily in a vacuum. There's nothing to say that we couldn't, you know, as we talk more about this in the future, identify one, two, three of these that we might be interested in combining. So the first option noted is to reimburse Minnesota taxpayer for their cost to electronically file their state income tax return. The opportunity of this could that it could be designed as a refundable credit that would reduce tax owed, or in the case of a taxpayer being eligible for a refund, it could increase their refund. Some of the challenges that might come of this could be that it could be complex to implement and operate depending on how it's structured. It could increase the rate of fraudulent returns as anytime there's an opportunity, I think, for taxpayers to file for a credit, we see an increase in fraud attempts. There could be a one-year lag between buying the software and receiving the credit, depending on how it was structured. And finally, a reimbursement or credit would likely be federally taxable and could potentially increase a taxpayer's federal tax liability. Option two, the state could decide to directly reimburse software providers for the costs for Minnesotans to file their state returns. Some of the opportunities here could be that it could be an efficient, easier to implement reimbursement method working directly with the providers instead of working with 2.9 million Minnesotans on a reimbursement, and that no taxpayer behavior potentially could need changing. Some of the challenges that could come with this were that vendor costs increase over time, and we would have to determine how to handle a plan for that if costs are changing year after year. And a flat fee reimbursement, if that's what we decided, may underpay for some of the services if add-ons are chosen, or it could overpay depending on the agreement and what add-ons maybe Minnesota would be interested in reimbursing for the taxpayers. Option three could be an in-house solution. Some of the benefits here would be that Minnesota would have full control over the development of its free file solution, and a solution could be built and customized to fit Minnesota's specific needs and guidelines. Some of the challenges are that the rollout could require a phased approach, much like Direct File is doing, where some taxpayers might not be eligible in the first year or the first years of that program, depending on how it was able to meet their specific tax needs. An IRS link to the federal return information does not currently exist, so that is something that we would have to provide a link for to figure out how to pull that federal tax information in for the state return. And then complex tax filings would be costly to support from a software perspective, depending on how complicated they were, the software code and the support of that would go into it, and then making changes, any changes over time would be a factor in that as well.
Could I just ask a question quick before you go on? So this issue, I would assume, of just because, you know, so much of the information on the M1 flows from the federal tax return, like this lack of linkage with, federal return information is a major barrier to us trying to develop our own system. And I just wonder, again, maybe you don't know because our state was unfortunately not chosen as to participate in the pilot, but I would assume if the IRS is building an in-house direct file system, that's got to be like a top consideration is like how to link that system with state returns. And so I don't know if you guys know if that's those conversations are happening at all, like with the IRS or not.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is definitely an option. Mr. Yule will get to another slide about the IRS Direct File. We can combine an in-house solution along with the IRS Direct File, and it would eliminate that particular problem and provide Minnesota with some cost savings.
Okay. Thank you.
The fourth option, no change, business as usual. The opportunities here is that it doesn't change the scope of Department of Revenue's people, processes, and technology. Minnesotans are very familiar with our tax process, and no changes there. And it really minimizes the impact to tax software providers and paid tax professionals. The drawback there is inaction will not alleviate the burden or the cost of Minnesotans to file their individual state returns, and so it doesn't really move us forward in that regard. The fifth one that Mr. Randolph here mentioned earlier is that the state could aim to be part of the next group that's of states becoming part of the IRS Direct File program. The opportunities here are that so we could potentially be on the leading edge and not necessarily the bleeding edge, which has its opportunities. But customers would be able to fill out and send in a free federal return using 1040, the form 1040, and then they would be directed to the state support tool that would allow them to then complete their state tax returns. Some of the challenges here are that, as I mentioned, this is in the early stages of development and limited to the most simple tax filings right now. The level of state effort to participate is unknown, but we would be involved in designing a state interface internally or working with a third party to have them help with that development. And that, and so this is something we're watching closely. And to provide maybe a little bit deeper analysis of what I mentioned there, I mentioned earlier for Direct File, the state of Massachusetts, they use the same software that we use, Gentax, and they're working with their vendor, the provider of that software, Fast Enterprises, and Fast is helping them build that that interface with Direct File in-house. Arizona, on the other hand, they partnered with an external organization called Code for America, a third party, and Code for America was one of their partners in figuring out how to get that federal information over to the state return so that their residents could utilize Direct File. So just an example of a couple different models there that, depending on how we wanted to move forward with that, we will continue to watch those and, you know, have some thoughts on, depending on how we move forward, where some of the advantages lie. And finally, option six, the state could take a larger role in promoting existing no-cost programs, such as what I mentioned earlier, Free File, VITA, TCE. Some of the opportunities there are that increased promotion would cost less than perhaps some of these other alternatives, and the IRS provides their tax software to the VITA and the TCE sites at no cost, so there would, you know, potentially be no additional software support or software costs for Minnesota. Some of the challenges are that VITA and TCE, for example, are more restrictive than Free File, which limits eligibility and perhaps some usage. Higher costs to support the rural sites is something that we've seen, having fewer people who can volunteer to help with some of those returns, and longer distances for Minnesotans to maybe travel to take advantage of some of those services. Just for your example, there are over 100 sites in Minnesota that support VITA and TCE. And we have a map on our website that gives you a good idea of where those locations are. But if you look at northern Minnesota, for example, there's obviously a high density of those locations in the Twin Cities here and some of the other metropolitan areas. But northern Minnesota, it could be a long distance for somebody to take advantage of those. So, It could be, I guess, depending on how you framed it, there could be some conflict of interest in terms of Minnesota partnering with some of these tax agencies or some of these filing services, just in terms of, like, you know, managing how we want to communicate that, just to try and stay, you know, a little bit neutral from as we have been with some of the other providers out there. So just a little bit of a relationship there to negotiate, or an approach there to negotiate. Another requirement of the Free File report was to gather information on if any other states have pursued a similar program to what we've talked about, partnering with a vendor to provide free tax filing for their state income tax returns. And based off the information that we've received, there aren't any states out there right now that have taken on this model of partnering with a single software vendor to provide that free return for all of their state residents. However, like you can see in this slide, like Minnesota, all states have resources available to their residents to provide some form of free tax preparation for those that qualify. And then, of course, this is influenced a little bit by, as I mentioned, there's 9 states that don't require filing your state income tax return. So as you see some of these numbers here, just be aware that that's one of the factors and maybe some of those that are lower than others. So to conclude this presentation and provide a summary of the information gathered, I just offer these points. First, partnering with a single software provider to provide a free filing option is feasible. But the success of this program is largely based on, one, the solution being adequately funded for multiple years, and really focusing on a multi-rollout period that's built into any planning effort. So in addition, future legislative direction and any free file solutions must allow for multi-year commitments. Significant development costs, as you can imagine, that would go into this. And there would be a significant internal cost as well, both with revenue and a minute to support a new system. And finally, recent advances in technology and software capabilities, they could make any of these options feasible. And with the right level of support, revenue will continue to learn more in the months ahead about some of these options, including more about the direct file program. And finally, before I end, I just wanted to share three questions that the team at Revenue working on this report were important for, that thought that they were important for decision makers to consider as they think about what this solution might look like. First, what is the role and scope of government with regards to individual tax filing costs? Second, what is the role of the public-private partnership in a solution like this? And finally, just continuing to consider, is it worth the continued costs and resources to provide Minnesotans a free or subsidized filing service? Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for your time. We'll stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Yule. Chair Joachim wasn't here when we started this, but I just wanted to mention before we move to a member discussion that she's carried this bill for a number of years and kind of led on this issue. And so I just want to say thank you before we move over. Representative Kosnick, you're first.
I didn't have any particular comment.
Oh,
the facial gestures.
Okay.
Nonverbal communication.
All right. All right. We were having a moment. I didn't realize it. I'm sorry. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Yule, for your testimony. So I'd like to go back. We don't have to switch the slides, but early on you mentioned that TurboTax and H&R Block had dropped the federal program. Could you explain why, or do you know why?
Mr. Yule, or?
Madam Chair and Representative, there was some reporting that came out from ProPublica and other media outlets that detailed some of the what they deemed was unfair treatment in the free file program. There was further investigations after that reporting, and as a result, those two large software providers decided to exit the free file arrangement.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. That was quite cryptic. I have no idea what that was about. So if you have any articles about that you would care to share, if you want to say any more detail on the record, that would be helpful. But otherwise, just send me some articles.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, we can send some articles. But if you were to search ProPublica. Free File, it will be your first result in Google.
I'll be happy to, Representative Robbins, this is an issue that's of interest to me, and it was my plan sort of, you know, when we have a bill on this to include that information, so I'll forward it over to you.
Perfect.
I mean, in the long and short of it, honestly, is that, I mean, I watched the, I don't know if anybody else watched a football game a few weeks ago, but there it was like every other ad was an Intuit ad, right? And so that was just interesting to me because basically we have a situation where, you know, for a number of years, there was basically this agreement where the IRS would not move forward with any efforts to pull, to provide the service, that free filing service to people in-house, even though they have all the information, right, that they need. And instead they would engage in this public-private partnership, which really greatly enriched these companies. At the same time, they have engaged in a multi-decade, multi-tens of millions of dollar kind of lobbying effort to throttle any attempt by the IRS to move forward with an in-house direct file program. You know, and I don't, I mean, you guys teased me, or the, what's the Twitter account? It's like GOP War Room, GOP MN Ledge War Room or whatever. Like when I said last year that I use H&R Block or TurboTax to file, they like put up this clip of it like, the tax chair uses TurboTax to file. Is she really like able to do her job? But like a lot of people, I use one of these filing systems. And, you know, for, I mean, obviously probably a lot of you guys have like real accountants, but I will tell you, from the perspective of a consumer, as you go through the process of filing on TurboTax, every other screen, they're like, do you want a scan by a tax professional, or do you want to just like go ahead with this, you know, kind of implying that if you don't opt into the $69.99 optional service, that you're going to end up with a different result. And there's just like, you know, over and over again throughout the process of filing, even if you have a very simple return, if you're filing on a 1040 EZ, it's like you don't need a tax professional. You don't need to pay this premium in order to see likely if you kind of have checked all the boxes. But, you know, it was one of the points that you made in here is that this is one of the issues with having, you know, basically a public-private partnership where we're diverting public resources into the hands of this profit-driven entity, which I assume they're doing pretty good if they have all those Super Bowl ads. But a lot of that revenue is coming from people who should just be able to go through the process and get their publicly subsidized free filing done because you're directed to that site by a government site because of this partnership. So you know, there's a lot of challenges here, and so happy to distribute that ProPublica article to everybody so that we can kind of get our arms around where we're at. And I think that, you know, sort of part of the good thing of that unholy alliance between the IRS and these profit-driven companies falling apart is that maybe we can get to the point where there are no, you know, kind of, I mean, I think of those as predatory practices of sort of trying to sell products to people that they don't necessarily need in the course of something that's supposed to be available free to the consumer based on their income. And so I'm really hopeful that the IRS will be able to do this at the federal level and that we can follow suit at the state. But sorry, that was a little rant, but we'll go back to you, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to both of you for your answers on that. So the next question I had was if the IRS is in pilot testing, and I know we're not one of those states, but what are the risks of us developing our own state program, and then it's really complicated to interface with the feds? Is there a benefit to just seeing what the feds come up with and helping promote the current VITA and TCE sites and just kind of holding our fire for a little bit? To me, I would hate to have us go invest a bazillion dollars in some proprietary state system, and then like 3 years from now, we're like, oh, it's seamless with the feds.
Mr. Yule. That's a
great question. I'm sorry. Madam Chair, Representative, you're absolutely right that there's reason to have caution. And I'll add a couple points, not necessarily related, but the first is that the IRS hasn't indicated what their next phase of the pilot will be. So we don't know when they'll start opening up for more states to participate and what our particular interest or how ready we'll be to do that. So there'll be a lot of information gained here over the next few months, and certainly once the filing season is closed, for us to gather that information, assess, and determine how it lines up with our own goals at the state level as well as the revenue within the revenue agency. The second thing is, and I mentioned this with some of the other potential options or some of the things that we're considering, but having an understanding of maybe within the IRS itself or maybe more at the federal level, it's undetermined what the long-term support at the federal level is for direct file. So that's something that politically we'll have to watch as well to make sure that if there's a change in administration or some other initiative that comes forward that, much like we mentioned, we would need that direct file is going to need long-term funding to make sure that that program is both sustainable into the future as well as expandable to meet the needs of more Americans who have more diverse tax filing needs. So it's a long answer to your question to say I agree with you, we need to keep our eye on it, but also as we sort of read those tea leaves, be prepared to move forward when we feel that the risk is low enough and the benefits are high enough.
Great. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I appreciate the answers. And to Madam Chair's your earlier point, I just wanted to point out that, yes, perhaps for-profit companies sometimes take advantage of private partnerships with the public sector as well. But clearly, we have multiple examples of that being true in the nonprofit sector. And I just feel like it's not serving the debate well to think it's limited to for-profit companies when really the more egregious examples, at least in our state, have been on the nonprofit side. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. On this specific issue, though, I will say that the Attorney General did recover some money, I think it was last year, from TurboTax because they had defrauded low-income Minnesotans on this particular issue. But your point is well taken. And so, I think that looking at all these options, including, you know, not going through an outside vendor, not going through, you know, a nonprofit or a for-profit entity, is something that we should definitely look at. Because I'll say, like, that was kind of one of my, like, you know, ignorant, new to tax person questions. I was like, in other countries, when I first joined the tax committee, it's like in other countries, they have all of the information at the kind of revenue service, and they mostly just like filing taxes just is automatic. It just gets done administratively. And so, you know, we have a system in this country where for a number of different reasons, I think, one of which is the power of the tax avoidance industry, frankly, we have to file ourselves. And so what that creates is a system where, you know, over decades, corporate interests in particular are able to launch these campaigns like ProPublica outlined with Intuit. It's sort of corollary. It's not the exact same thing. But just that there are, we all know about corporate loopholes, about legal tax avoidance strategies, about Jeff Bezos not paying any money in income taxes, about, you know, some of the biggest corporations in the world not paying corporate taxes in the U.S., engaging in, strategies of stashing their intellectual property in low-tax jurisdictions overseas, and kind of on and on and on, and moving your corporate headquarters to Ireland. And we could go on for hours about this. But, you know, I think that we do, just like as people who are thinking about tax policy, as people who are like practitioners in this space, how can we cut down on those kinds of practices and just be kind of rational about, like, if we can streamline this process, if we can have the agency that holds all the information that one would need to fill out their taxes to hold that mechanism internally, like, that just seems like a no-brainer to me. But anyway. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was looking at originally we had allocated $175,000 for this study to be done. I see that on the front page here of this report, it says that this report cost approximately $54,746. So that's a pretty close approximation, give or take 25 cents or so. I really appreciate the fact that we know to the dollar how much money was spent on this. And I've been informed by our fiscal analyst that the remaining money goes back to the general fund, which is exactly where it should go. With that being said, I truly believe that this study is a wonderful example of a bad habit that we have come to here in St. Paul. Because looking at this report, that we paid $54,746 taxpayer dollars to find information that we at this table could easily have done on our own. Take a look at this. We found that there were 9 of 27 surveys that were responded to. I think that we, in our role, could have come up with a survey and could have sent it out to the tax providers. I think we could have done that. I'm sure we could have come up with an estimation that it would cost between $2.4 million and $19.5 million to implement this. I'm sure we could have thrown a dart at a dartboard and come up with that. I'm disappointed that we invested this sort of money in something that we don't know, and that's basically what this report came up to. Like, the report basically says we don't know what it would cost. We don't know. Here's some ideas. These are all things that we could have had this conversation in the tax committee, and it would not have cost the taxpayers any more than what it would cost for us to sit at these tables regularly. I'm extremely disappointed. We spent $3,041.44 per page of this report, including the title page, the really nice letter that was 6 lines from the commissioner, and the table of contents. This report includes a number of citations that can be found on the Department of Revenue's website or the IRS's website. These are all things we could have done. These are all things that if someone was incredibly, if this was their number one issue, if they said, you know what, we need to investigate free tax filing for all citizens of Minnesota, we could have done this. and we could have saved $54,000. I appreciate the fact that the department saved $120,000 more dollars than what they were allocated, but I think this is a true example of a bad habit that we've gotten into. Oh, I guess I discounted the 25 slides on the PowerPoint. That also was created, too. So an 18-page report, a 25-page slide, a perfect example of a bad habit that we've gotten into here in St. Paul of not doing the work ourselves and having someone else do it for us.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds like the representative is talking about having a full-time legislature if we're going to use the royal we for all of us to do all of this work. Thank you. I'm talking. So back to what we're actually talking about here today. I started this project 3 years ago because I was concerned about some of the same thing Chair Gomez is talking about, and that difference between folks being able to find leaving money on the table because they don't have access to things they should have access to. As a state, we ask folks to pay for taxes. We should make it as easy as possible for them to do that. And right now it isn't, especially for the folks that they need that money even more than ever before. And we can have, I am glad you asked that question about what the role of government is when it comes to this. And we always have those philosophical questions here, and they're good ones to have. There are different roles for profit, for nonprofit, for public-private partnerships, even within our own government layers between who, what should the county do, what should a city do, what should the state do. Those are all good questions to have, but we can't lose focus on the reality of who they're affecting. And we have folks that are not able to access that funds and access those money because they don't have the money to get an accountant or maybe even the money to go to Intuit. And it's a little personal for me because my husband's been filing our taxes, finally got them off of paper onto Intuit. And we paid for, not the free filing, but we paid for the full program. And we're actually balancing out what we either owe in or what we take out compared to when he was doing it on paper. And that shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't take somebody to have to pay a program for that. And we don't know, and why we wanted folks to look at this, and thank you for your time. I don't want to discount all the time that you did spend on this, and thank you for having it cost less than what we wanted. And maybe we should have written the bill a little bit better to give you some more direction to give to the programs that are out there. But I can also personally tell you how long it got me to took me to pass this, because those lobbyists were in my office trying to get me to stop it. So this is just the start of a discussion. And sometimes we need to have somebody else find the information for us because we all are really busy. And I just want to thank you, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the discussion we're going to have on this issue. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pinto.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson started his remarks by talking about sending out 27 surveys and saying he could have just done that, and then ended saying that he would have saying that could prepare the report in a couple of days. And I guess I'm just trying to figure out if he's available for free survey sending out, I might be able to come up with some surveys. I might have him send out and available for a couple of days. I might do as well. Because basically my thinking is that, you know, it does take money to do to spend time, right? I mean, sending surveys out, there's like an effort that has to be involved. Folks have to write things up. I'm tempted to ask folks around the table if we could, just having seen this, if we could specify the six options that were presented to us along with the opportunities and challenges of each one of those options. Like, that is useful information. And I kind of feel like the comment was sort of like, oh, that's so obvious. We just were presented it. I bet if we all closed our eyes right now, we're asked to say the six options and the opportunities and challenges, we couldn't do it. Like, it is actual, it takes thought. And so thank you, Chair Joaquin, for putting this together. We have to spend money to have things happen, and if folks are available to do that without having us pay them, then that's helpful for me to know because I might have some things we want to do. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Olson's name was mentioned, so we're going to go to him. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. I appreciate the question as to what my time is worth, and I'll tell you that this is my job. If it is something that means a lot to me, I deep dive into it, and I think this is the case for everyone. I would at least hope that every representative, when something means a lot to them, they deep dive into it. So if this was an important thing to me, now I'm not discounting whether or not it's important or not. I'm saying if this was something that was truly important to me, I would put in the time, even after work hours, And I would get together with my representative colleagues and I would say, hey, this is important to me. We should do this. That's what I'm advocating. I'm sure we can find an hour in everyone's day while they're here or during the summer where we could do this. I'm just making a comment, not trying to disparage this report. I agree we did not provide them with adequate ideas and guidelines and targets. But I do believe that when we talk about all these studies and all these reports that we're asking our agencies to do, and then we say, well, we can't ask you to do this report or this study without compensating you for it. I agree with that. But when we can do the work ourselves, we should do the work. When we can't, that's when we need to throw the ball into their court. And this is an example of a time where we absolutely could have done it.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question first to the testifiers. Just curious about the percent of Minnesota returns that really would be eligible for free file or that are, you know, basic returns overall. Like they wouldn't be paying into it fees, and they would, I guess, if they have a Minnesota state return, but.
Mr. Yule?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm not sure we have that information for Minnesotans. I think, as I mentioned during the presentation, I think 70% across the country would be eligible for free file based off estimates. But in particular to Minnesota, I don't have that information, but we can follow up with you with that information.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. So let's say it's at least 60%. I think that's great. I do agree. I think most of us think that we should have something that's free and that isn't trying to get you to buy more services and it isn't trying to, you know, so I think this is a good discussion to have. And I would hope, I think the free file is probably the way it's going to go as the IRS rolls that out. And so I would hope that we can be kept informed of what's happening with that, because I do think it's a burden to everyone. The more complicated our tax code is, which is, you know, the problem, frankly, you know, is that we have a very complicated tax code. And the more that happens, the more expensive it is and the harder it is for everyone that's doing the free file all the way up to people that are filing, you know, this big tax returns, right? So we should also remember that as a legislature, we're creating the problem for our citizens, too, by making taxes complicated. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going back on one of your files. Mid-year and federal conformity law changes would increase costs. Is that because it's in mid-year that we'd be doing the conformity costs or change?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. Yeah, so the idea is that most of the software development and changes get done during what we'll call the off-season of taxes, and then anything that would pop up during the filing season would likely require additional resources to make those changes and impacts, and so that would be the driver of the cost, Representative.
Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair. Would it be possible to have automatic federal conformity laws? Would that reduce the cost?
Mr. Yule, not exactly sure. So we're a selectively conforming state. I mean, is that what you're asking about? Is
we went to automatic.
Yeah. I mean, we'll go to Mr. Williams. I guess you're wanting to say something. Just that's probably out of the scope of our presenters, maybe.
Chair Gomez and members, there's a Supreme Court case that says that we have to sort of manually update our code to respond to federal changes. So it's not possible to just automatically update. There's been kind of efforts at the state level to do sort of administrative accommodations to do more pre-conformity, but we couldn't just automatically update and adopt federal changes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
Representative Witte, you're good? Okay. I think that is the end of my list. I just wanted to, I appreciate Representative Anderson, your comments, and I think that hopefully we can find like a solution to this that we all can agree on, because, you know, like you said, I think in principle it's like nobody wants, you know, people to have services kind of pushed upon them in any kind of predatory way. And also just your request that we stay up to date on this conversation as it unfolds, because it is like a dynamic one. And I know that Mr. Williams is also kind of tracking these issues for us. He tracks some federal issues for us, and he just is paying attention to some of those conversations that are unfolding at the federal level. I am too, and I'll just make the request to our presenters, like, you know, if something interesting happens, please let us know, and maybe we'll have you guys back in to have another conversation, because I think this has been a good conversation for us to have. So with that, thank you so much for being here. And we'll move on to our bill that we have. All right, so we have House File 1171, Representative Brand. Rep. Brand is going to move that House File 1171 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. Rep. Brand, welcome to your committee. Hi.
Hey.
First bill of the year. You're excited. And it's the very exciting topic of appurtenances and attachments. So that's great. Rep. Brand, would you like to move the DE1 amendment?
Yes, Chair Gomez, members, I would like to move the DE1 amendment. This is language that was agreed upon between the Department of Revenue and the Minnesota Rural Electric Association as well. So, and we can get into that in a minute, but that's my motion.
All right, is there any discussion on the motion that we adopt the DE? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. To your bill, Representative Brandt.
Yeah, so you might remember this bill from last year. On March 21st, we heard the bill. And so today I'm just kind of hitting the replay button, so to speak, but also it's new content in this DE. I think the Department of Revenue and the MREA had a great time in the interim having a conversation about what this language looks like. You know, I've been talking with the Commissioner of Revenue on this as well in the interim over the summer and the fall. So I'm really glad that we're here today to talk about this. For some background, in 2021, the Commissioner of Revenue reinterpreted a law from 1939, Minnesota Statute 273.41, for all those that want to see that statute, related to tax exemptions to the fixed cost of operating electric utility in rural Minnesota. So you think back then when they built, you know, what they built for infrastructure out in the greater part of Minnesota, a lot of these folks that were putting the electrification from the source to home were co-ops because it wasn't very profitable for a lot of these bigger utilities to do that. You talk about many, many miles sometimes between residents, that can get kind of costly. And so that's where I think in America, but especially in Minnesota, co-ops really stepped up to electrify all Minnesotans across the state. And right now, it's just as similar of a situation as it always has been. In greater Minnesota, the cost of operating electric utility is spread over a lot fewer households than in metro areas. And so, you know, this tax exemption that we're talking about today remains critical to keeping these co-ops costs down and providing affordable electric service for all Minnesotans. There are over 50 co-ops in Minnesota still doing the jobs that they're doing every day, and the dollars that people pay for their electric needs go right back into those co-ops. They're not profit sectors. And so this bill is a ratepayer protection bill, and I could talk a little bit about my specific area. There was a Free Press article, Make Your Free Press article, a couple of weeks ago talking about the cost. It's eye-popping when you think about that, because that would fall on all of the ratepayers, and that would be quite a shock to the system when we're talking about utility rates and keeping the cost of living in greater Minnesota affordable. And so I'm going to turn it over to my testifier, and I'll stand for any questions afterwards.
Great. Thank you, Representative Brandt. Welcome to the committee, Jenny Glumack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. And good afternoon, Tax Committee members. I just want to begin by thanking the Department of Revenue and Commissioner Marquardt and Joanna sitting over there. We had some very great discussions in the interim to collaborate on this language, and we are hoping to get it across the finish line. This year, it simply updates a 1939 statute, as Representative Brand said, on our property tax issue, exempts streetlights, meters, and low control receivers. co-ops pay $10 per 100 members. And as I said, this has been in effect since 1939, and we just need to update it after, you know, 85 years. I'd also like to thank Representative Liz Lagarde for all your help on this issue, and Representative Davids. And I'll take any questions.
Great. Would you? I didn't have you identify your name.
Oh,
and
sorry.
Title.
Jenny Glumack, Director of Government Affairs for Minnesota Rural Electric Association.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. All right. I'm just going to move to member discussion. Representative Lissinger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a comment to Representative Brand. Thank you for leading the charge on this, and with all the stakeholders, both Jenny and then the department. This has been, what, a few years? And it's a really big deal for the co-ops and the people in greater Minnesota. So I just want to give my kudos and thank you for getting it over the finish line, hopefully.
Thank you, Chair Lissagard. Is there anybody else who wants to have questions or comments? Not seeing any. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, would like to thank Representative Brand for carrying this bill. In your opening comments, I think you were a bit far too, well, you were far too kind with what actually happened here. The law had been enforced for many, many years, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, the Department of Revenue, boom, starts taxing these things. And we're going, show me where you can do that. Well, they couldn't. And so we have a situation where the department just comes out, big money grab by the department, and I worked on this, Representative Liz Lagard worked on this, and Representative Brand, I'm hoping you can bring it across the finish line. And I do thank the department, Madam Chair, Representative Marcourt, the whole crew that has worked on this, because, like I said, out of the clear blue, here it is. Yep. You're going to be taxed on this stuff. I'm going, no, you're not. Well, yeah, they were. So we have fought this for quite some time. And I want to thank Commissioner Marcourt and, like I said, and his staff for putting this together, the co-ops, because if we don't put this into law, you are personally raising every co-op member's electric rates.
Right.
That's what you're doing. So please support this bill. Let's get this in. You know, this bill is so important and so good and so well written with that amendment. Madam Chair, if this was brought as a solo bill to the House floor, there would be no Republican amendments, even though it's a tax issue. None. Let's just get it through.
Consent calendar.
Consent calendar. So, Madam Chair, thank you, and I do thank the department, not the previous departments, but this department for getting this thing straight out, because it just wasn't right what was done to the co-ops. And this is a day to correct a wrong, and nothing that Commissioner Marcourt or Joanna Bears or anybody else did. They're trying to fix it, and this is the fix. Raising the rates just out of the clear blue, Madam Chair, on co-op ratepayers was the wrong thing to do. House File 1171, as amended, is the right thing to do.
All right. We got straight talk with Lee Davids. That was good. So there is a small cost to this bill, but we should talk more about, you know, its path, depending on how things work out. And I do just want to say also just to thank Ms. Bears. I know she's been working on this a ton. And to your point, you know, Chair or the Commissioner and his whole team. Anybody else? Okay, that's it. No further discussion. Representative Brand, do you want to close us out?
Yeah, just as a point, I guess, you know, make every press reported on it on the 15th of February. It would cost Medco Electric, which is in my neck of the woods, $118,000 to the ratepayers. And so that would be a lot for individual ratepayer. And so I think this is the right thing to do, and I appreciate the discussion today, and I'm looking forward to getting this to the finish line.
All right. Thank you so much. With that, Representative Brand is going to renew his motion that House File 1171, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. And the bill, as amended, is laid over. All right, that's it for the day. Our next hearing of the Tax Committee will be Tuesday, March 5th. And with that, we are adjourned.